There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, and the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. It is the meme coin called oil. That's what Brian just said before we went live. Oil is trading at record highs, record crashes, record rips, record dips, all within a matter of days. Literally 30, 40 hours of this volatility around oil has been something that the markets of a whole have been gripped with. Again, it's around the macro environment, but we're going to break that down and how it affects crypto, because during this volatility, when oil ripped and then it dipped, you would think that crypto might be selling off as the rest of the market sold off late into Sunday night into Monday morning, but it didn't. So we're bringing you the statistics, we're bringing you what happened, and we're breaking it down with my friend Brian today. We also have a ton of other fun stuff, especially crypto related. We're going to go over CoinMarketCap. There were some massive buys. MicroStrategy with a massive buy on Monday. Bitmine with a massive buy. We have some Solana ETF stats we want to get to. There's more U.S. national crypto banks being made by the day. Lawsuits are pending from the big boys. You got to hear about that. Kraken partners with the NASDAQ and some more AI talk on the back end. Brian, again, just we went live Friday, so like what, 4 days, and we got a whole nother list to run down here, but we'll start off with oil. But I want to see how you are, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no shortage on news, Tivo, and you nailed it. The meme coin we call oil is exactly what I said before we jumped on. And, you know, I love to go down the speculative train talking about, you know, AI agents or meme coins or these volatile assets where we can make a quick flip. Little did I know, all I had to do was watch the, $140 trillion market cap they call oil to catch certain opportunities. But we're going to break it down for you. Always some interesting news out there in the crypto world.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to understand why something was going on, but we want to really lift up under the hood here and dive into it. So obviously there's the war in Iran going on, and that's not what we're here to talk about, but it is disrupting the markets top to bottom. And again, nothing was affected more than oil. So over the weekend, things, I guess you could say, heated up a little bit. And then what happened going into Sunday night when the futures open is oil just started absolutely ripping face. Sorry, that's the wrong one. I don't want to show that one. Where's the other one? Here we are. So oil started ripping face. You could see that huge gap up. I mean, we're talking about from the weekend, you know, from Friday all the way to Sunday night, it went from, you know, about $70 a barrel all the way up to, at one point, I believe it hit like 111. It got into those wicks, those giant wicks, the hockey stick that we talk about a lot here to be careful of, got into the 120s. And so that's complete panic from kind of a global scale, because we won't get into too much here, but you know, the price of oil, every dollar in oil equates to, I think, 2 cents at the pump, something like that. So it's an inflation worry. If this is something that's going to be long term, people start panicking. And then obviously what we kind of saw here is oil turned into a casino. And so late night, you see this rip up into the 110s, the 120s, and then you know, you're like, wow, what an absolute rip. And then as soon as it went up, it tumbled down the next day. And it's just the volatility went all the way down, all the way up, you know, to 111, 120, and then all the way down to 84, down 30% since last night's highs. That's, again, Sunday into Monday. And there's a myriad of reasons for that. But I think the biggest thing from our perspective is kind of looking at this and saying, okay, well, what happened to the crypto markets during this? So for that, we'll pull up CoinMarketCap. But spoiler alert, crypto held strong. If anything, Bitcoin was up, and crypto kind of across the board, the blue chips were up heading into Monday. So the stock market woke up, and there's a light liquidity in the morning, but the futures were all down. I mean, it was a huge sell-off. Oil's up, stocks were down across the board. And then I was looking at the Bitcoin market, and if you're going here on the 1 week, again, that's a little bit of a dip here, but on the 1 week we're green and it wasn't selling off. Like here's 9, 10, 11. So here we were coming out of the weekend on Sunday. And then as Monday comes, we're starting to tick up here, right? So it was a complete opposite move, very similar to what we've been talking about, how, you know, crypto led the way down along with software. And then they've been showing signs of relative strength over the last week or two. And oil didn't cut the legs out. And overall, the market's held up pretty well this week, but it was a wild, wild trade in oil. It was the most, like literally it set records for percentage-wise for the ups to the downs. And my final point before I hand it off to you, Brian, is this is exactly what we talked about with commodities. When we saw silver, when we saw gold, when we saw copper and uranium, it was the new casino. Right. We saw silver ripping, you know, 10-20% in a day and then crashing 20-30% in a day. The volatility of these things just became, quote unquote, the new casino. And people start trading futures and you could get caught off sides. You could squeeze these gammas and send these things ripping. And I think that's what we saw in oil this weekend. And there's a reason for it. There's a reason why people are running there. They're trying to front run what's going on in the macro. But is there anything that stuck out to you? Crypto-wise, the oil trade, how did you digest all that in the last 36 hours?
Yeah, it's been a wild 36 to 48 hours. I mean, specifically Sunday night, I think Bitcoin bottom ticked right around like 66K, 65.5, right around there. And I kind of had that feeling in me again, like, here we go again. You know, it's going to be another Red Monday. We got Trump saying that the war in Iran or the tensions without unconditional surrender. So everyone started piling into the oil trade for obvious reasons, because, you know, the oil is becoming a scarce asset with, you know, all the, you know, with the Strait of Hormuz and everything along those lines and the insurance of the oil tankers. But then we wake up on Monday and we see this sign of strength in the Bitcoin market, which was frankly a little surprising to me. Held that strength and we've looked pretty good today. I think we were up to like 71 and change today. So really encouraging to see the crypto market, the overall crypto market. I don't want to say be unaffected, because we saw it happen on Sunday, but kind of just hold this tight range we've been really talking about, that 60 to 70 range. I'd love to see us break out of 71, 72 and hold it for a while. And then we'll probably be looking at some other levels. But this is the high end of the range. And we like you said, oil is trading 30% up 1 minute, 30% down. And it's really dependent on what's happening in the news. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about it. But we had Trump come out, I think it was today, where he said that now he thinks the war could be over quicker than he expects. So we really don't know. But those comments are absolutely affecting the market. And we should have known on this oil trade. When we saw like everybody on crypto Twitter, every meme coin trader, every crypto trader around was piling into oil futures on Hyperliquid. You know, that's probably a good time to fade the public, like we always said. So yeah, you're right. We touched $115 a barrel. Now we're down to $84. And I'm not exactly sure what my gut's telling me where we go from here from an oil standpoint. You know, that's not necessarily my expertise. Markets are, but I mentioned this to you yesterday. I'm going off a little bit off script here, but Iran has an interest here to keep oil barrels of oil high, you know? So it's like almost their defense mechanism. They're not going to win from a military standpoint. And I think everybody knows that. But they probably want the price of oil to hurt you where you know, to get the headlines out there. Like, hey, right, we're paying this much. Can you believe a barrel of oil is $150, $200? So we're seeing a lot of volatility in this major market. It's such a huge market, too.
So just to lament on that for a second, I think that's the wildest part. Like, we do a lot of stuff with you and Joe and the Momentum Moneymakers, and we're always warning people of, hey, you know, be careful here. It's $1 million market cap, and we're trying to watch it go to a $5 million market cap. You know, we're talking about market caps in the billions and billions of dollars that is moving like a yo-yo. And it's just insane. And that goes to my point is, you know, back in last year in January 25, when we were doing the hype of the meme coin craze and Dave Portnoy was tweeting out greed one, greed two. It's like, you know, we kind of knew what it was, right? It was the meme coin casino and there was ways to get alpha, especially in the Momentum Moneymakers group. But you knew what you were kind of signing up for. You were trading hype. And then for this thing, there's tons of people that make a living off of trading these commodities that aren't used to this volatility. And they, a lot of people, will be honest, they don't even want, especially this type of volatility for these type of products. That's not, it's not meant to be that way. But just over time, people want these exposures to be able to go and trade options and do these, you know, 1 week, 0 day options. And these gamma squeezes just freaking send things to the moon, and it's wild. Like, you can only imagine who you know got caught maybe short. Like, you went into the weekend, a ton of people were saying, hey, I bet Trump over the weekend's gonna tweet out what he did, and he ended up tweeting that on yesterday, Monday evening, was oh this is gonna be a short campaign, we've basically already won, you know, yada yada yada. It's he pancakes every other day. It's like, hey, we're gonna be in here for a while, or we've already won, depending on what the market's doing, seemingly. So you could totally see a bunch of people going up and shorting oil around, you know, whatever the 80, the 70 to 80 level, saying, hey, I'm playing for a tweet that's that claims victory over the weekend and deflates this oil back to 60. And that's not what happened. It went the other way, and more, you know, more activity over there. And then those shorts got caught off sides and had to cover. I mean, that's the only explanation for this. I don't necessarily, you know, have the ins and outs of the crude oil report for options, but that's to get these type of moves, that upside swing, and then less than 24 hours later, a 30% decline. I mean, oil had a bull and a bear market, Brian, in 18 hours.
I know, and the people trading oil or commodities on a daily, they're not built like us. They're not ready for those 30-40% pullbacks and 40-50% upswings. They're not built like that.
There's a trader you may know who has receipts for an 11 o'clock oil short on Sunday night. I'm just saying.
Yeah. that's true. Tivo showed him to me yesterday. He's like, and I was like, that was a sharp move. I think it's exactly what I said. I would have probably told you to stay away from that trade on Sunday night, just because who knew what was going to go, what was happening. But Tivo knew. That's all I know. I didn't tell, but I love to see my guy get some W's.
Hey, you gotta find the wins where you can in this market. It's super tough, but let's we are on CoinMarketCap right now, and I love that they have the Brent oil there for us to look at. But I thought really what was really cool is how Hyperliquid got into the mix. So if we move back into crypto specific, we've talked about Hyperliquid a lot on this show. The volume that they're doing is unbelievable, and the oil futures got into the mix over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, Hyperliquid's one of my favorite tokens out there. I don't think that's any surprise to anybody that listens to the rundown. I talk about it quite often. I've followed it closely. If you're in our community, you know I've given it a call a handful of times. And I honestly continue to continuously dollar cost average in, because it makes a lot of sense to me what the platform, what it offers, being that decentralized platform. And you can get exposure to gold, silver, copper, and of course, oil. And when we have these really volatile days in the crypto world, and especially in the commodities market, people are running over to Hyperliquid. They're longing oil. They're shorting oil. And really, if you own the hype token, you probably don't really care what happens if it goes long or short. You just want action. You want volume on that platform. And it's the largest decentralized perps platform around. So it's absolutely smashing. So I'm still a big fan of Hyperliquid. The futures hit, what, $1.2 billion in trading volume? Massive numbers. I think it was in the billions during that silver push as well. So there's always some really interesting tokens out there that are a little bit different than all the other ones, but it's the number one L1 out there, right? Meaning from trading volume happening right now. So you have to pay attention to Hyperliquid and what they're doing.
You know what's wild? How many guys hit their 30s and suddenly everything feels harder than it used to? Your energy dips, the focus isn't there anymore, and gym progress stalls. The conversation almost always turns to testosterone. So I've spent a lot of time digging into this, not just the headlines, but actual studies, ingredients research, and talking to people who've gone down the TRT road. And once you really understand what traditional TRT involves, it includes lifelong injections with needles, shutting down your body's natural production, fertility concerns, and it really makes guys pause. That's why I've been paying attention to Mars Men. It's designed as a TRT alternative, not injections, not synthetics, just a stack of well-researched ingredients like Tonga Ali, zinc, and boron that are used to support healthy testosterone function. I've seen the science behind these ingredients, and I personally know guys using it who say they love how steady their energy feels. No spikes, no crashes, and no needles. For a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. Mars Men is made in the USA, third-party tested, and backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. Over 91% of its users report higher energy levels, and the reviews speak for themselves. And again, for a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts. After checkout, make sure you tell them that Crypto 101 sent you.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Yeah, it's making a lot of noise, and there's a lot of people paying attention to it, including Arthur Hayes, who had an essay on the hype token, making a call that it's going to 150 by August 2026. I guess I can click on the Substack here. We can pull this up.
Might
as
ask
well.
You to subscribe. I wonder if that's him
skiing.
Yeah, you see that? I mean, that's great. That's great form, literally. But, Yeah, an interesting read here. It's a bull post about hype. I mean, it's literally titled it Hype Man. It's the title of the article. Now, I think there's some on-chain records of Arthur Hayes selling some hype right around $28. I saw. I have to verify that. Now, I'm sure not all his entire stack, but he makes a very compelling case for Hyperliquid. Take it with a grain of salt. You know, 150 price prediction for hype in a few months, I believe, it is an outrageous prediction. And he maps out some ways it could get there. Never say never. I think hype is a really strong token, and I like the setup for it right now. And I'm a holder, so end up dollar cost averaging in. So obviously I'm a believer in it. Sign me up for $150 hype token, Arthur Hayes. I think there's a path for it. Do I think that's the path to least resistance, or should I say that's the most likely outcome? Probably not, but I do think it's really showing itself of how much action it's getting in these times, how strong of a token it is, and what they continuously they're building. They use the revenue buybacks to support hype token buybacks. So a lot of interesting things behind this app, and I think this, we talked about this on last rundown. I forget why we were talking about it, but we're talking about apps in crypto, certain apps in crypto that, you know, make a lot of sense. They make money, and this is one of the few cryptos out there that do really well making money. They're a very niche app. They have a strong following. So yes, I do think it could go higher. Do I think it could go to 150? I'd probably sell before it gets to 150, so I probably won't even know.
That's great. Yeah, and I think a cool thing about this token is it's something that we've talked about and covered for a while, not only on the podcast, but even before that, inside the community. I know, you know, the team's talked about it on the VIP calls, and Rohit has written about it in the newsletters, our guy. So again, if that's something that you're interested in getting, these type of write-ups that you're seeing on the screen, this is Arthur Hayes' Substack, but again, we have our, you know, Crypt Nation community. So if you're interested, go down and check out some of the links so you can get, you know, more involved with the community and more access to the team. I'm going to pull up CoinMarketCap one last time, because I just to overview again, looking at the 7-day here, let's look at the 7-day, the CoinMarketCap 20 is up 2%, Bitcoin about 2.5%, Ethereum kissing against 3%, Somebody's up six here. Dogecoin. There he is. Legend. The legend. The legend. Unbelievable. Anybody beating Doge? Sui's got some strength there. Oh, that's great. That's great to see. Oh, Pi. Shout out Pi. Tao. That's something that our team's talked about a lot. Very cool. So I think the cool thing is here, you know, Fear and Greed Index. Again, if we go to crypto specific, which is what we are here and how we've covered this, I find it very refreshing to see us holding strong when there's a lot going on in the macro, right? There's a huge macro event that's creating crazy volatility and people are clenching their pearls while we're carpet bombing, you know, another nation. And usually that triggers, you know, a lot of volatility, and it did in the oil market, as you saw earlier. And we didn't fluctuate as much as the rest of the market. And I think that's a testament to the volatility and the negative price action that crypto's had recently this year, right? So it's kind of the old saying, hey, you know, you're not on the same side of the boat as everybody else right now. If anything, if you're buying crypto, you're probably a contrarian. But also, you know, the sellers, whoever wanted to sell seems to have sold at this point. If you're not going to sell in this huge downdraft and then you're going to stabilize and then we start World War III and you're up 2.5% on the week, that's a signal of strength in my eyes. What about you?
Yeah, it's certainly a signal of strength, and it does feel like most of the sellers have exited. Now, there are some, you know, there's some big, you know, whales out there. There's you could probably dust off some sellers that want to get out of their position. And we've had some massive buys that have come in as well. Like, I think we're going to talk about Michael Saylor and what he's doing with Stretch and MicroStrategy. So we've also seen some massive buys, and I'm sure he's buying a lot right now as well. But with all this being said, it feels like we're in this higher end of the range. And again, I think we might stay there for a little longer, but this feels like 2025, what happened with tariffs, right? Like Trump was coming out tweeting and moving markets, like 100% tariffs on China, 100% on Canada. And then 2 days later, he'd withdraw it and we get a little pump in the market until the market was just immune to, you know, those tweets. Feels like we've kind of seen this before. The market feel Bitcoin's become a little bit more grown up and sophisticated, kind of get some of those sellers out. And now we're just holding in that range. And where I said there's a path here, we got out of that tariff lull and then pushed back to some all-time highs as well. There's a path here as well. Geopolitically, you know, wrap up this war with Iran, get some bullish headlines, sign a market structure bill. You know, we might be off to the races again. But I still think I don't think we're out of the woods yet. You know, love where we're at. Love we're in the upper part of this range. Love being above 70K. I'd love to see us close like above 72 and hold it for a while. But we're probably not out of the woods yet. We could probably get some headlines, but it doesn't feel like the darkest day. It feels like the darkest days are kind of behind us. Now we're just trying to find our footing and figure out what the next move is going to be.
Yeah, and I think the one thing to note, one last macro point before we dive into the whales and the buying and the crypto specific stuff we've seen this week, I think is a note that you want to talk about is inflation, right? And so I pulled up Trueflation here. Obviously, Trueflation has been much lower of a statistic than the core inflation numbers that the Fed has been using in the traditional reporting measures. So that's a, you know, a place for debate as well. But with these oil prices, and again, it's dropped from its high, but it's still much higher than it was, you know, 3 weeks ago, is that oil is something that can creep into the inflation numbers pretty quick. And so when you have a mass, you know, wartime event like this on a global scale, and then obviously oil goes higher, that's going to affect the inflation numbers. The Fed is going to absolutely be pausing. I think we kind of already knew that I got a message there, threw me off. But we already knew that with Powell, he's not going to be, you know, going in and cutting before his term's up, and then Warsh is going to take over. But, I mean, this just puts the nail in the coffin for the Fed's not going to make a move. Even though this data is saying inflation's falling like a rock, there's no wiggle room for any movements when you have so much action going on around the globe and oil prices are rising. So that's not something that we can count on.
Yeah, well said, you know, and let's talk a little bit about some of these buys have been happening out there because I got Michael Saylor can't stop.
Yeah, man. That, I mean, this is one of his bigger buys in a while. I think a fun stat is they captured, I saw on the tweet there, is 571% of the weekly supply. And you know, MicroStrategy is hammering the buy button, which they have been doing. But you know, 17,994 Bitcoin is a large number. And then he's not the only one. He's accompanied by friend of the show, Tom Lee, buying another 60,000, basically 61,000 ETH for a value of 122 million as they continue to go to the quote unquote alchemy of 5% for Ethereum. These are dip buys. I think we kind of covered it for a while where we mentioned every single time these guys were buying, especially when, you know, Tom Lee opened up the Bitmine shop and it was a new kind of news flow. And then, you know, definitely the buys got a little bit smaller and smaller. And, you know, I didn't find it was like newsworthy every week if they're just kind of doing a little dollar cost averaging. But these were kind of get out the hammer and do some dip buying.
Yeah, and how much, I wonder, has this to do with that stretch, which is that NASDAQ listed perpetual preferred stretch stock that Saylor has? And I did look it up while we were talking. I was just curious about that. They have a dividend, so it's essentially a price target right around $100 per stock, and then they have a dividend, and I think the dividend rate's like 11.5%. So you'll get paid cash on these dividends every month. I think the first payout's on the 15th. Oh, yeah. Super producer. Yeah, the 15th. So interested to see kind of how this is going to affect, you know, his buys. But I looked it up to see how much of this 1.28 billion came from the stretch. And it says 377 million came from the stretch shares. So 5,300 Bitcoin alone came from this single raise. So excited to see how this continues to develop. I mean, love him or hate him, what he does, Saylor sticks to buying Bitcoin, raising more money, buying more Bitcoin, figuring out another way to buy more Bitcoin, and it's up. And I think this is a big reason that we haven't seen as much volatility in Bitcoin, but we've seen it across the entire crypto market. It's not just Bitcoin that's soaring. So there's strength in the crypto market right now. But this is very interesting to see that, you know, 5,000 Bitcoin were bought through these shares, and the dividend rate gets paid out on the 15th. I wonder how that's going to affect the stretch shares. Are people going to sell after the dividend? Are they going to hold on to it? Just something I'm kind of keeping some tabs on.
No, it really is fascinating to watch. Again, I call it financial alchemy, right? Of creating these products. A lot of hot takes around the community and just in finance as well, not only the crypto community, around what Saylor's doing over there. It is quite fascinating. Sometimes it's a little hard to understand. And that's kind of the argument of some people, is like, hey, I don't understand it, so I can't invest in it. But there's people that love it, and there's obviously huge strategy fans. And we kind of talked about how strategy during this, the kind of bloodier days of this year, became, you know, one of the top five, you know, shorted stocks again. So, you know, that's always, that same side of the boat trade, and you get a crypto rip, and then, you know, same thing we talked about, oil shorts start covering, and, you know, that's how stock prices can kind of squeeze to the upside as well. We haven't talked about Solana in a while, and that's going to change in many ways, because we just had on a friend of the show, Max Kaplan. We just did an interview with him today. That'll come out in a couple weeks. He's the CIO of Sol Strategies, which is a publicly traded company as well. But we have somebody else from the Solana Foundation scheduled to come on later this month. So circling back to Solana, we haven't forgot about it. But the price action, along with everything else, hasn't been good. But some interesting data around the ETF. So even though Solana is down 57% since their ETFs launched, it's really interesting to see who's kind of been holding on and accumulating. And our friends over at Bloomberg Intelligence put this together. And it's a ton of crypto investment firms and market makers. So it makes sense, you know, you want, they're going to want, especially if you're a market maker, you got to have the supply. But I think it just kind of, it shows a lot of a lot of conviction from their parts of like, hey, planning for the future. These type of programs and buys aren't for quick trades, right? They're accumulating for long-term holds and for market makers specifically for different types of products and offerings and facilitating of this product and coin. So I think it's a good sign and kind of sticks to the theme that we've talked about many a times the last couple of weeks is like, hey, retail will be back. And institutions and investment firms gather stuff up on the low and they sell at the high. So kind of seeing this and continue to see this accumulation, I think, is a long-term good sign for Solana. And obviously the tourists are not around anymore.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you nailed it. We say it, we talk about it all the time. I mean, we're big fans of Solana and what they're doing. And these are some major firms out there with Solana exposure, and it does feel like, retail's left a little bit, but, the institutions, the big banks, the smart money is continuing to add to their bag on the low. So I don't think they would be doing this if they're worried that crypto's dead or any of those clickbait headlines that we see on a daily. There's certainly some smart money piling into some of our favorite tokens.
Yep, and a lot of smart people joining us today. Not a huge crew, but a very active crew. We've got Deborah, Trinity, Grant is here, YOLO, CJE, and Kevin Stanley in the chat. Haven't seen Kevin Stanley in a while. Kevin Stanley's asking about Punch the Monkey, man. Punch, I hope he was a big fan of the Punch call. He really enjoyed that 6X, so he's wondering if we have any more up our pockets. And you never know. You're going to have to tune in Friday, Kevin. This is a macro rundown. Friday is going to be our meme coin special. Not only are we going to have Brian, we're going to have Joe. We haven't had Joe on in a while, so that one we'll do. We'll start off with a little regular rundown up top, but it'll be the Momentum Moneymaker Spectacular Friday afternoon, so you're going to want to tune in for that. I'll get that landing page up on Thursday, but we're going to do that Friday afternoon with everybody. Some really cool news. Again, we were shocked that Kraken was the first national U.S. crypto bank. Yeah. There's more coming, man. It's snowball effect here. Holy cow. Crypto.com. The Crow, we just, Brian and I made a credit card recap video. So we took basically all the people that offer credit card rewards or crypto credit card rewards. So it was, Gemini, Robinhood, Coinbase, and we threw in crypto.com as well. So that video is going to be going out this weekend if anybody's interested in credit card rewards. It's a big breakdown. It's like 30 minutes long. We really dove into it all. But crypto.com coming out on top with a national U.S. crypto bank approval, Brian.
I think I love this headline. This is amazing for crypto.com. It's amazing for the crypto industry, but I feel like we both kind of body bagged the credit card during the tutorial.
No spoilers. You got to tune in. Maybe it could be right for you, though. It might not be right for us. It could be one of the listeners might love crypto.com.
That's true. That is very true. We didn't throw it under the bus. We just said, hey, it wasn't right for us, but it might be right for the right person. So you got to check that out. But this maybe would have changed our tone slightly. Who knew? Crypto.com had this up their sleeves the entire time.
I will say, I think we all we were like, oh, you get the rewards in the Crow token. And we were like, and then, now look at the Crow token, an official U.S. crypto bank token.
Feels a lot stronger today than it did yesterday. Yeah, I don't know what the price is.
6% back on Crow token seems a lot better today than when we recorded that video. So a fun, super awesome video coming out on the channel later this week. Tune in for that. But So crypto.com joins Kraken, but that's not where it ends. Cause then I saw this, I got to pull up this link. I just saw this right when we went live so now Counter Trend. Kraken's getting it. Crypto.com's getting it. Well, Jamie Crypto Diamond, Goldman Sachs, and all these guys want to start suing. They want to block it. They don't want crypto bank license. That's not fair. If you want to be a bank, be a bank. It's Jamie's just crying. He continues to cry in his own little spilled milk.
It's exactly what he said like a week ago or just a few days ago. When he goes, if these crypto companies want to be a bank, then be a bank. And now they're taking those steps, and he's all jammed up.
He's like, if you want to be a bank, be a bank. They become banks, and now he's going to sue them.
it's like if I've never said this, but I saw this happen to somebody once. I was a bystander, but I remember seeing this individual in a gas station once was like, hey, blah, 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 you want to take this outside? It's like kind of a little threatening. The guy looks right over to the guy and goes, yeah. Puts down his drink and starts walking outside, and the other guy didn't want to have any piece of it. That's exactly what it is. He called his shot. Mm. Jamie Dimon asked if they wanted to take this outside and fight, and the crypto companies were like, they were holding the door for him, trying to get him out to fight him. So, again, pretty big news here. Even though we're trading in this tight channel, and you know we're bragging about up 1-2%, and you know feeling good. At the end of the day, this is just really big news happening in the crypto space, how it's integrating with banks, how things are really just starting to develop. And it should make everyone feel very bullish, even though it might not be directly changing the price as of today. This is this is the rails we're building. This is the future that we're building. And it's great to see that these headlines continuously roll in every single day.
Yeah, so one side of, you know, the old guard doesn't want the change, doesn't want the competition, and, you know, is trying to sue and stop and put up walls and barriers. And then there's another side of the coin where, you know, there's some successful, you know, old guard, quote unquote, type of companies like the NASDAQ here that are partnering. So NASDAQ partners with Kraken to do 24/7 tokenized stock trading. So there's people that are running with it and trying to partner and trying to you know be on the forefront of this, and there's people that are trying to stop it. And again, I personally can't speak. I don't work inside of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. My guess would be they're less along the lines of not wanting to do this type of products. They're trying to build their own. They want to build the moat around tokenization. Because remember that clip from Jamie Dimon? He was crying. He was, you want to be a bank, be a bank. And they wiped his tears, and he's like, but we love crypto. We love blockchain. We've been using blockchain forever. We're building. So it's like he cries and says he doesn't want to do it. You know, he doesn't like this stuff going on. And then, but, oh, we love crypto. We love blockchain. We're actually building products. So, you know, all is fair in love and war, and it's a dirty business out there, especially in the banks. So it feels, even though you might see those headlines and say, oh, they're scared of crypto, they don't want to, you know, adopt. I think it's actually they are adopting, they're building their own products, but they're a little behind the curve here. So it's kind of the strategy of, hey, are we going to partner? Is Nat like a NASDAQ partnering with Kraken, a Robinhood partnering with Arbitrum? Or, you know, are you just trying to build everything in-house, but, you know, now you're looking around, you're a little behind the curve, and so you just start throwing lawsuits left and right to try to stop people. That's kind of my look at the field if I was an offensive coordinator up in the booth instead of being necessarily on the field calling plays.
Yeah, that's a great call out. And with all these headlines here, Tebow, going to throw a question back at you. Do you think this is neutral? Do you think this is net bullish for the Clarity Act and the market structure bill that, you know, we're starting to see more collaborations, more partnerships, or is it just like, you know, these are so independent of each other? Because banks, they don't want to pay yield on holding crypto. Crypto companies want that. That's such a clear line here. But now we've seen the White House and Trump kind of take a side with these crypto companies. But now we're starting to see even bigger headlines here.
You got to remember, Trump. I mean, the Trump family business as a whole is a crypto company now with World Liberty Fi in a way, right? Not necessarily the sitting president, but his son. So, I think I still stand. We talked about this. I can't remember if it was a show or two shows ago. I think it's going to get passed, but we just don't know what's going to be in it. And it's hard to say right at this moment if that's going to be, you know, bullish or not. It's got to get passed, and we got to see the actual bones of this thing. And that's with any, you know, thing that comes out of DC. These bills get passed, and they kind of highlight one or two things, but inside the bill is 100 line items, you know? And so it's definitely gotten held up. There's a lot of people, a lot of lobbying. The banks, you know, I'm sure are one of the biggest lobbyists in the, you know, in DC as a whole. So they want some things. The crypto firms want some things. The administration seems to want some things. So I think this news overall is just, it's what it's been. The fundamentals have been strong. The price action hasn't followed. So again, you got to do your research, and part of the research is the Crypto 101 podcast. It's the YouTube, it's the podcast. And if you want more, you got to dive inside the community to get the reports and, you know, work with the team and the VIP calls, because that's how you kind of parse through the noise. There's a lot of noise and you got to try and find the signal. And I think that's what, you know, we try to do our best for the community. And you just got to continue on that path because the fundamentals are there. The fundamentals are there. So that makes me super bullish. But I can't, I can't pretend to know what's going to be in that final version of the Clarity Act. And if anybody can, that's on a podcast and isn't in DC writing it, is, I think, lying to you personally until we actually see it.
Yeah, no, that's a really good take. I think the point to be taken here is fundamentally things are stronger than ever. The price action is doing what it's doing, but we should be able to get out of it sooner rather than later. Does look like we got somebody in the chat here from India. We're all over the world because
that might be a first.
I know, because we get a lot of representation from the UK. There's a few other countries out there, and I'm always loving it when people from like other countries or across the world are tuning in to Brian and TiVo for the market rundown. I mean, it's the only place to be, but love to see it.
I don't even want to try to mispronounce that name, but that's so amazing. We started facing LPG shortage here in all the states in India. Love from India. Hey, boys, love. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, we got the UK. We got we've had New Zealand. We've had Australia on the other side of the globe. I think we've had Hawaii. We've had Canada. Unbelievable. We need to create a map and start checking off people in the chat on the map and see if we can get them all. India is a first. Thank you so much for tuning in. We really love it. And if you're new here, this is one of the first times you stumbled upon, give it a like. It really helps. And then on the bottom right, give a subscribe on the bottom right there on our logo so you can come back and join us. But please tell 10, 20, 50 friends in India to tune in. We'd love to have more of everybody around the world join in on the Crypto Rundown. That is really cool. But moving on, we've got a lot more AI agent talk. This is something that you're really passionate about, and we covered last week. But Brian Armstrong from Coinbase teeing something up around it.
Yeah, I mean, this is you can actually scan to the bottom here and just see the screenshot. You can see this tweets from CZ and Brian Armstrong. And so we talked about this a lot, and we're going to probably talk about it a lot more on Friday, so I don't want to take up too much of the show. But the integration of AI and crypto is here. These AI agents are becoming real economic actors in the space. So we got Brian Armstrong saying that AI agents could soon execute more transactions than humans. Crypto wallets enable them to participate on this on-chain economy. I have been preaching that for a long time now. And then we have CZ chiming in, talking about AI agents will make 1 million times more payments than humans. And there's even something, I think it was on this show or maybe on one of our newsletters, I was saying it to Joe. We were kind of saying it tongue-in-cheek, but it did feel like crypto was made for robots and not humans. Now, obviously, it's great for what we do and what we want with the blockchain utilization, but this integration of AI and crypto is happening faster than ever, and we're just seeing major partnerships out there. So in just the past couple of days, we saw Coinbase launch their agentic wallets. We saw Binance introducing AI agent skills. OKX is building agent wallet tools. Crypto.com introduced the agent key. And Dune is opening up an NCP server that allows agents to access on-chain data to more than 100 blockchains. Heck, even OpenSea, the NFT platform, made an adjustment where they want agents to come in and be able to evaluate trends with NFTs and pricing. So the AI agent crypto world is here. We had a flash of this a year ago, and it was absolutely epic, but it kind of ran out of steam. But this really feels like this AI agent crypto 2.0 is here to stay, and it's getting a ton of hype, and it's something I'm really passionate about, like you said.
Yeah, so I pulled up this second chart. It was a quote tweet from our friends over at Milk Road, just around AI agents market size, and they kind of just, you know, strapped it out from 2025 to 2030 here. You know, something to look. I mean, it's what everybody is predicting. It definitely seems like it is a same side of the boat type of prediction. So I don't think anybody really knows what it's going to look like. I don't think we claim to know, but it's going at such a rapid pace right now that you have to cover it and you have to learn about it. And I think you, you're really passionate about it, and Joe, and knowledgeable as well. So, you know, I think it's something that we'll keep bringing up on this show and trying to educate. And again, we kind of said it, we did a big segment on it, what, Friday, and we're like, anybody's really interested in this, let us know in the comments and we can try and cover it more, or do a separate show around it once every couple weeks or something, kind of like we do with prediction markets. So let us know if you're super interested in that. But I saw this, Meta acquired Moltbook. And so what, Moltbook was one of those first ever social networks for AI agents, and they were all in there communicating with each other, right?
Yeah, Meta comes, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And they even have a meme coin called Molt, which was a past call. I looked it up earlier today to let our community know. I think it was right around February the 5th at a few million dollar market cap. It pumped all the way to about like 8 to 10 today. So it was not financial advice, but I was kind of just open with some people in the community. It's not financial advice, but if I had any Molt holdings personally, I would probably take a little bit of chips off the table, because this feels like a little bit of a sell the news type of event. I do think it's huge. I mean, we have Meta, one of the largest companies in the world, acquiring Moltbook. So amazing to see that, you know, this isn't just, you know, a couple guys on a rundown or a couple people in the Momentum Moneymakers talking about AI agents and how it's changing the world. This is good old Zuckerberg going out and acquiring Moltbook. And they also acquired their two devs. And man, what, I don't have off the top of my head, but they got some like titles that like head of like super intelligence of Meta. So I'm sure they're getting pretty nice paychecks, but they're so obviously on to something.
When did you give out Molt to the community?
February the 5th was that newsletter. It's like a $3 million market cap, $4 million, right? Nice. Around there.
So that's a true double. And then I saw it kind of sink down, what, over, and it just ripped back up. Oh, I could share it. Sorry, I'm looking at it. I'm not even sharing it. Here's the 1 week on it. And then
I mean, the thesis was always there. I didn't think it was going to be Meta that was going to acquire them to push it to, you know, a 2-3x. But they were strong founders, strong working products, and was having a ton of AI agents visit the actual platform. And that's something that we break down when we go through something we call the cusp effect, that we're looking for a real team with a real product doing a real plan. Now, the reason it went down, why everyone might ask, is just because it's a hype cycle. And then everything else that was going on in the macro world, you know, we were seeing Bitcoin have major swings as well. So some of these smaller market caps were obviously going to get hit kind of hard, but these are getting picked up by major brands, major companies. We have Meta literally buying Moltbook, not the meme token,
right,
but the actual platform. Right. I want to make that clear that, but the meme token pumps off of this actual acquisition. So amazing stuff.
Yeah, CJE in the comments, where did you call it, Brian? So it was about, what did you say, $3-4 million market cap?
Yeah, it was February the 5th. Under 4 million market cap. So right around, you know,
that double from when you gave it out. And then obviously, if you look at the 1 month chart, you did have a an opportunity to buy the dip. But if you put any chart, you know, with crypto over that time, obviously there's more volatility in the low cap market, but trending down with everything else, and an absolute ripper. So, but yeah, if that's something you like, those low market caps, high volatility, high opportunity, but also high risk. If you're interested in learning kind of those calls and getting them in your inbox, check the link for Momentum Moneymakers in the description. That's Brian and Joe's group. Let's do, if there's any questions, we'll have some time. We have some time at the end, an active chat. Once again, I think we always have the best active chat. I'm sure we will have hopefully a bigger crowd and even more active people on Friday. But if anybody has any questions, just in the chat now, toss them in there. We'll get to them. And we'll finish on a fun one. Didn't have this on the sheet, but let's pull up Doge. That was a fun one. We'll get a little sampler for the Momentum Moneymakers rundown on Friday, where we'll do a deep dive into some meme coins. Let's give them a little sampler. How about the 1 week performance on Doge? 5-6%.
Well, 1 week cup and handle, it looks like there. Doge, I this thing is just, it's still a $14 billion market cap. What was it? Its all time high? Its all time high was $46
billion?
$46 billion market cap. Doge is like the OG meme coin, you know, and it's certainly when Bitcoin rips, Dogecoin rips, because people just love Dogecoin with the meme coin, the community behind it. It does actually have some utility behind it now. So there's some interesting mechanics there, but man, this sucker still trades in the billions of dollars of market cap. You know, and I want it to. I don't want anybody to get hurt on it or anything along those lines. It's just kind of shocking that it's still up into $14, $15 billion market cap. But it was all the way in that primetime meme. In the primetime meme coin season, what, just the past year, it did get up. It got up to about, yeah, $40, $50 billion market cap. So, you know, crazy.
Unreal. Unreal, just a legend. A legendary run for the Dogecoins. It continues on. Deborah said, what time on Friday? We have it scheduled at 1 p.m. I don't have the landing page up, but 1 p.m. Friday. If anybody around the world wants to join us live, anywhere around the world, you're more than welcome. 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, that is. Whether you're from India, Australia, New Zealand, anywhere around the world, we'd love to have you. And I hope Deborah can make it there. So that's gonna be it for today. It was a good rundown. It was a little bit of a macro rundown. Some say it could be the oil rundown. That thumbnail that you saw of Brian breaking down the oil there was another fun one. Not as good as the hopium one, but yes, Deborah, that's gonna be EST on Friday, 1 p.m. But that's gonna be all for us. Any final thoughts, Brian, before we head in to midweek and look forward to Friday?
No, looking forward to Friday. We'll talk more about some speculative worlds of meme coins and AI agents, and I'm sure we're gonna have a plethora of macro to talk about then. Well, because it feels like every single day we wake up with something, and there's going to be another world event that's affecting the market. But hopefully, it affects Bitcoin and the rest of the crypto market in an upward move to the right. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it seems every 24 hours there's enough news to make an episode. So we'll see what comes on Friday. It'll be super fun. It'll be good Friday vibes. 1 p.m. Eastern on Friday. We'll see you on the next time. But until then, I hope you have a great rest of your day and the rest of your work week. We'll have some fun with you on Friday. But that's all for now. Bye-bye, everybody.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.